Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine. Whose world is this?
It's yours. DJ World Premiere. The world is yours.
The world is yours. DJ World Premiere. The boy wonder. And today, ladies and gentlemen, I am joined by a special guest. I want to give y'all a little backstory. If you've been following the pod, you know that I support creators first and foremost. Every day I look to see how we can make an impact in all the creators' lives, because I consume a lot of content. People consume my content, and I feel like in the eco cycle of what we do in entertainment, it's our responsibility to make sure that whenever we have the opportunity that we share our platforms with each other. And I've shared this platform for damn near everything. If you were selling plates out your backyard, I put you on the pod. I put you in the description. I let people know where to find you. If you had a cleaning business, shout out to Jose. It no matter what it is that you do, I make sure that all the creators know that this is a platform where we will promote you. Today, I am joined by a childhood friend. Scrolling through these apps, I see my man had a book, and I hit him. I said, yo, I'm gonna buy some of them books. He was like, all right. I ordered the books. And I said, yo, I got a podcast. I want you to come to the joint and talk about your book. So today, ladies and gentlemen, I am joined by father, author, fearless survivor, Santino Blow.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for having me, man. For real. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Man, it's been ages. We was chopping it up in the green room. Santino told me it's been 22 years.
Yes, indeed.
God, damn. 22, you know, I had my hair back then, too. I had my hairline back then.
Yeah, you know, we was about, 60 pounds lighter. From, especially me, I didn't even think I got the 100 pounds until I was in 11th grade. Always been small. Man. But as soon as I hit 35, it went up.
Shit, that's a blessing. That's a blessing. Now, we know each other because we met each other. My parents was in the military. My mom retired, and we was living in Georgia. She left Georgia after about a year or two. And then we moved to Richmond. Then we moved to Newport News. And then we moved down to Chesapeake. So we moved to Kingsbridge. My mom worked at the post office downtown. And it was a big deal for me because I feel like that's when I finally knew, like, there was, like, stability. Like, being a military kid, my parents moved 2-3 times a year, whether you wanted them to or not.
Wow.
So you never really spent no time making genuine friends because, like, fam, we going to be out before the season over. We out. We going somewhere else. Yeah. And you just going to do the same thing over again. There wasn't no cell phones back then, so it couldn't be like, we locked in. I'm going to text you. I'm going to call you tomorrow, dog.
Yeah.
Like, we was pen pals with niggas. But I met you at a time where I knew there was going to be stability. You was a little fresh nigga in the block. And I was like, man, this nigga got the fit. This nigga had the racing jacket. I remember you had the racing jacket.
The DuPont racing jacket. The DuPont racing jacket.
I said, yo, my man is fresh. And I laughed because I'm like, we used to do some nut up shit, and one thing I knew about you early, I knew you had influence from older men.
Yep. Because wow.
I was raised by older people a good portion of my life, living with my grandparents, and older people carry themselves a certain way, and you carried yourself a certain way. We'd be doing dickhead freshman high school shit, and you'd be like, y'all gonna throw water balloons at girls. Y'all should be trying to do something else with girls. What's wrong with y'all? Yeah. And I stop and I'd be like, yo, son got mad points. He making valid points over here.
Well, that's good though.
But you got this book, Fearless Survivor.
Yeah.
So give us some backstory on what got you into your journey to become an author.
Well, okay. I'm going to be very honest about this whole interview. That's all I'm going to do. So, actually, I was going to get counseling, and the therapist told me I should write. I should write down the things I like, things I don't like. So, when I got home, I was just writing down stuff. She was like, whatever comes to your mind, just if you like it, write it. So I write down food, ginger ale, cookies, shoes. And then she was like, on the other page, just write down what you don't like. I was like, it's hot. Wrestling. It's like just crazy stuff writing down I don't like. So my now wife, then girlfriend, came in the room and was like, why don't you just write a journal? I was like, for real, you thought? I was like, no, that's corny. I was like, man, that's corny. I don't want to do that. That's corny. I ain't into that. Whatever, you know. And she was like, I think it'll be good if you write a journal and turn it into a book. So I looked at her. I was like, nah, I don't know. So she was like, I'm going to order you a book. So she went on Amazon. First, she came back and said, what would you name it? If you had a book out, what would you name it? So I got Fearless Survivor on my hands with Bible verses. So I was like, you know, I name it Fearless Survivor. So she ordered me a book off Amazon, and the cover had Fearless Survivor on it, and it was just pages, like blank pages in there. So I started writing in 2018. I just started writing. And so, like, just write everything. Just write. So the first thing I started writing was about my childhood. When I started writing about my childhood, it, like, triggered me so bad. Like, I started crying as I was writing it. And my wife was like, she was like, babe, you ain't dealt with your past. She was like, that's why you so, you know, you sabotage things and you run from things or you give up things because you're not healed from your past. And I was just looking at her like, maybe you're right. And I just started writing everything, just writing. But I would only write when I was inspired to write, you know, like if I felt like writing, you know, because it took me 6 years to complete the book, you know. And it's not a whole life story. It's just certain things I wanted to talk about. Like, it's not like my whole life story. And, you know, I'm going to eventually write another book, like, to capitalize on this one. I'm going to come back with a part two to certain things that I didn't talk about or things that I did talk about. I'm going to go real deep into those moments. Like, I really witnessed a lot of stuff that I think a kid should never witness growing up. I witnessed a lot of horrible things that no kid should ever witness. And I'm going to be honest with you. Some things that I witnessed as a kid, I very well took my kids through the same stuff. So it was nothing that I could say to my kids to be like, you know, don't do this, don't do that, if I'm doing the same thing that I'm telling them not to do in front of them. So I wrote the book, and I started changing as I wrote the book. Like, I just started changing, like, mentality-wise. I started changing, like, you know what? I know this book really gonna help somebody. As I, cause I would write chapters in it, and then I would give it to people. I'm like, what you think about this? And I mean, everybody I ever gave the book to read, they'd be like, "Dang, you been through that?" Or who you talking about in this book? I'd be like, "I'm talking about me." They were like, "Dang, you been through that?" I was like, "Yeah, I've been through that." I was like, "What you think?" They were like, "Oh boy, this good. This good." You know, my aunt told me this is a bestseller. I was like, "Don't lie to me." You know, she was like, "Nah, for real." She was like, "Because it's honest, it's raw, and you really trying to help people." So that's what inspired me to write.
That's a fact. That's a fact. I'm glad you talked about the stuff you've seen and how you put your kids through the same thing, because I definitely got a few questions about that. So early in the book, you talk about the impact of not having your father in the household. And yep. I think that's, for our culture, I think that's very common. I don't think a lot about that. And I don't want to dismiss your, you know, your experience, but I think a lot of us have that experience.
Yeah.
But I think that it definitely changes you, right? Like, if your parents is alcoholics, you probably grow up and never want to drink. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If your parents argue all the time, you probably run away from confrontation just because all you have is like bad experiences and triggers from it. So your father wasn't around in your household on a regular basis. And you talk about undue weight that he put on you when he told you that you were the man of the house.
Yes, man. Listen, when my dad told me I was the man of the house, it ruined my life. Like, looking back at it, I can admit it, like, it was certain arguments that me and my mother got into because I thought I really was the man of the house. It was certain arguments I got into with my stepfather, which is a good dude. He, like, at the end of the day, he is a good dude, but I was so bent on making my daddy happy that I couldn't see nothing but my dad okaying me or his pat on the back. You know, that's the only thing I wanted. I just wanted his praise. That's all I wanted, was my dad's praise. And my dad left me when I was 4. But people always say, you know, how can you remember that? Because he was there every day. He was there every day that I can remember. So, you know, it ain't no mystery. My dad went to prison for selling drugs. So, you know, he called home. He did 24 years and 9 months in federal prison. So when he left, I was 4. When he came home, I was almost 28. I was almost 28 when he came home. It's nothing you can tell me, you know. But the little boy in me craved his praise, even at that age. I'm a grown man with my own kids, but I still wanted that praise from my dad because I didn't have it. So that's why I feel like all these young men out here killing and mobbing and gang banging and stuff like that, I feel like if they had a viable, good standing man that they can look up to, it'd be different, man. I know it will. And the reason I say I know it will, because I got 2 sons. One right now, one just bought his own house last week, closed on the house last week. And the other one is being a Marine right now in Paris Island.
Ooh,
so
shit.
I know what a good father influence can do. Yeah, I did some nuthead stuff around them and stupid stuff around them. But at the end of the day, one thing about it, man, like, I believe in God. I just keep it 100. I believe in Jesus Christ. And I always let them know that. Yeah, listen, don't get confused, you know, because my oldest son, he's seen a lot of stuff I did, you know, like, he's seen a lot of things that I did I grew up with him, basically. You know what I'm saying? We grew up together. Like, he seen me go from house to house, couch to couch, you know, jail, back with this woman, with this woman, with this woman. He seen it all, you know? So I'm just thankful, man, that he didn't turn out like nothing like me. Like, you know, I thank God, man, that he didn't turn out like me. Like, when I was lost in my early 20s, you know, early 20s, early 30s, you know?
Now, what obstacles that you feel like that were put in front of you that you made sure your children didn't have to go through? Because, like, you talked about that being like the worst thing that could happen, being told that you were the man of the house. And maybe it was because partially you weren't ready, or maybe it was because there were no stipulations with it, right? Because I don't think telling you that you the man of the house is the worst thing ever, but ego.
Yeah.
Ego got the best of you, right? So
yeah.
Now you telling mama she can't go out the house after 9 o'clock. Where are you going? Hold on, you gotta check in with me. What is you doing?
Yeah.
I want this for dinner. You know what I'm saying? So
what
did you avoid doing to your sons that was done to you so that you could help put them in a better position to win?
Okay. Well, it wasn't really like I was questioning my mom, where you going and stuff. You gotta understand, when my dad left, my dad abused my mom before he left. I seen my dad hit my mom in the head with a 9mm gun in the forehead. She still got the mark in her forehead before he left. So he did things to my mom too. But when he left, my mom was in abusive relationships all the way up until 1998. So from 88 to 98, my mom was in abusive relationships. That's 10 years of my life. 10 critical years of her life. You understand what I'm saying? Pre-teen, all of that. So by this point, I'm so full of anger. So full of anger because I felt like the cards I was dealt in life wasn't the cards that everybody else was dealt. Because I'm suffering with an illness. My daddy gone. Now I got to watch my mom being beat on. Like, so what I did different from my sons, I didn't never tell them they was the man of the house. I actually told them when I wasn't with their moms, hey, and they mom get a new man, hey, respect that man. And I also tried to communicate with the new man and be like, listen, thank you for helping me raise my son, because I know you're in the household with him. Even though I'm not, I'm never going to step on your toes. I just ask that you don't do one thing, and that's put your hands on my son. Call me, I'll do that. But other than that, it was always, I was a team player. Something that my dad didn't do because of his ego. And like I said, I'm going to write another book while I get into deep into that, because my mom ended up marrying the man that my dad didn't like before he got locked up. So I'm growing up not knowing that I'm looking just like my dad to this guy. And my dad telling me, yeah, he the enemy. Get him out the house. Get him out the house. And he looking like, well, man, I know his daddy used to do this and that on the street. So, man, this his son. He might be capable of doing the same thing. So I understand. He wanted my mama to put me out, get me far away as I could from them. And I respect that now, that I'm a man, a genuine man that's humble and respectful. I understand. Don't no man want no young punk around that's crying all the time or trying to act like they running this or running that, and they ain't doing nothing. Like, come on, man. So I'm going to keep it 100. That's why I say I respect my stepdad. Like, he one of the realest, you know, because he stepped up and took care of me when he ain't had to. So that's what I do different with my sons.
When you didn't make it easy for him, he still was there trying. I think that's a big deal. And like you talked about it with your kids, like, hey, when I'm not here, whoever stands in this spot, you got to give him the same respect. Yeah. I think that's a big thing. I don't think enough men really do that with co-parenting. Like, with co-parenting, it stops with mom, right? Like, I don't have to deal with your dude, but you kind of do because that man is in the house. Like, what if he not good at math? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what if you can't help your kids with their homework?
Like, anything. Like, just like, I feel like this. Okay, say this. Because, you know, this is a big, big topic on the internet right now. Bud Crawford, mother. You know, I don't know if you've seen it, but Bud Crawford, dad, the boxer, wanted to be in his son's life, got him into boxing in the first place. And then Bud knocked this guy out in the gym, and it was scouts there, and they said, oh, man, that's $1 million fist he got. So the dad was there. The mom was not even there. The dad take the son home, Bud Crawford, home, and tell the mom, yeah, that's $1 million fist he got. She said, no, that's $1 million fist I got. Now, I'm not going to do that. Like I'm not, I don't want to deal with no woman like that. But, you know, we all run across, well, you know, I have run across women like that. But my thing is this, I'm a team player. If it's another man that step up and do what I ain't do, more power to him, man. Thank you. You know, I know I'm hot-headed at times. I know I can be arrogant at times. But at the end of the day, I care about the well-being of my kids. And if I can't give them the best me or the best version of what a dad should be and another man can, man, thank you. Like, only thing I ask is, if I'm trying to get it together, when I do get it together, let me come back. That's all. That's all I ask.
Don't kick my back in. You know what I'm saying? I think that's like, that's my biggest ask in my co-parenting. Just don't kick my back in. Don't kick my family back in. Let my child come up with their own, you know, hey, this is how they feel. This is their stance off of their experience. Don't influence their experience in a negative way, because I don't do that for you. Like, if my daughter with me, and she starts, oh, you know how mom is, you know, I give her that look. Yeah, well, guess what? She gonna be like that little nigga, like you, and that's how, how it is.
Yeah,
double down.
The world would be so better, man. The world would be so better if the parents were always on one accord, no matter what. Like, but you know, you get women and you get men too. That when the relationship done, they done with the kid too, and that's not cool. You know what I'm saying? And I'm speaking from experience. I have done that before. Oh, I ain't messing with her. Oh, forget. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, well. Now, guess what? I done that to my second son. I done that to him. And I came back into his life. Now, guess what? Now, my daughter mother doing that to me. And that's all I'm going to say. You know, I ain't really talk too much about that, you know. But
look, we ain't trying to get nobody in trouble today. But I do.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I want to rewind a little bit because I feel like we probably skipped over the biggest part. I know I talked about you being an author, being a father, being a fearless survivor, and you talked about your disease. So you have sickle cell SS. That's the most severe. Can you break down sickle cell SS for the listeners that are not aware?
Okay. Sickle cell anemia, SS, is the worst case of sickle cell. Sickle cell anemia is having low hemoglobin, low oxygen in your red blood cells that cause them to turn into a sickle cell shape. Now, when that happens, if you can imagine a small vein, a small capillary, blood flowing through it, it's circular and it's smooth. Okay, a sickle cell is sticky and shaped like a sickle. So imagine those flowing through your vein, if they get stuck, running to each other like a car accident, wherever that happened is where you will experience pain at. And as you know, blood go throughout your whole body, so you can experience a pain crisis, is what they call the episode of pain, when the red blood cells are crashed up and bunched up wherever they are. Now, most of mine are like in my chest. It happens to be in my chest, my lower back, my legs, but it can happen anywhere. And when that happened, I'm going to just say this. In my book, I talk about me getting in a fight and me stabbing myself, right, accidentally. Well, I didn't even know I was stabbed accidentally until I got to the hospital, because my sickle cell pain had kicked then, and that was so greater than any other pain that I didn't know that I was stabbed. So when you're talking about pain, that's what we're talking about. I didn't even know I was stabbed.
That's tough. And you talk about your pain crisis often in your book. And I just know from growing up with you, you used to have the spells. It used to be, you know, we might not see you out on the block for a week or two, you know. And hey, you know, somebody bring your school books to you, bring your work to you. Or you would be a home and back ass nigga. You know what I'm saying? You wasn't kicking.
Yep.
You didn't always look like you was your best self because you were dealing with your pain crisis. I know with everything that's going on today, when it comes down to big pharma, pain management. What's pain management like for you? And are you weary of possibly getting into a point where you kind of get accustomed to the pain management and or addicted to the pain management?
Well, I'm going to keep it 100, man. That's a very good question that you asked. I'm going to keep it 100. 99% of people with sickle cell are addicted to their pain medicine, and they have every reason to be, because the pain is unbearable. So if you're dealing with an illness that starts from 6 months of birth, from you're born, then you're 6 months, and that's the first pain crisis you experience, and you're now 40 years old, can you imagine you been from 6 months all the way to 40 of hurting? It's what Tylenol can't get rid of, that type of pain, you know? So the most of the people with sickle cell are prescribed medicine like Dilaudid and Oxycontin. As you know, Dilaudid is 7 times stronger than morphine. So that's the medication that I'm on. That's the medication that I'm prescribed. But I'm still able to drive and do everything that a normal person can do, because my body is used to it. It just take the pain away. It don't knock me out anymore or anything. It just take the pain away. It's like me taking a Tylenol to you. It's not going to make you sleepy. Well, it may not make you sleepy, but, you know, it'll just get rid of the pain. So, you know, I was introduced to Dilaudid at age 19. Before that, I was just getting morphine, you know. So the medicines, you know, have gotten stronger, man. Like, I'm on pretty much the highest dose of hydromorphone, which is Dilaudid, which is 8 milligrams. You got 2 milligram pills, you got 4 milligram pills, and then you got 8 milligram pills. And then I take Oxycontin twice a day. You got 80 milligrams in the morning, 80 milligrams at night. That's long acting medicine. So it's extended release. So it releases medicine over a period of 12 hours. You know, and 80 of Oxycontin is the strongest Oxycontin you can buy, too. I mean, and get prescribed. Not buy. You know what I meant to say.
Yeah. We're getting everything prescribed around in these parts. Don't.
Yeah, everything prescribed.
Nothing. Yeah, I got doctors. So what's it like for you to, because I'm leading up to my big one here. Okay, I'm leading up to my big one here. So you're a young buck. Daddy gone. He told you, you man of the house. You know, you said he was in a street life. You've got this pain. How do you think your parenting or your dad being away and you basically being told that you're man of the house. So that was like a little bit of battery in your back. And you're living with this pain every day. How do you think that molded your personality?
It made me angry. I'm going to be very honest with you. Like, I wasn't angry. The only time I wasn't angry there, for real, is when I was playing a game at your house. Or, you know what I'm saying? Just being honest, I was angry in school. I was just angry. And people used to be like, oh, it's for no reason. No, it wasn't. I was hurting. And I didn't know how to explain it. Like, I was hurting physically, and I was hurting emotionally. Like, man, I'm going to tell you something, man. This is the God honest truth. Man, the night we graduated, man, that's a night that it still bothers me, because I remember certain guys, their dad was not in their lives like that either. But on that night, their dad showed up, you know, and I just remember, man, after we all graduated, all the parents came on the field with their kids and stuff, and I just looked up, man. I looked up in the sky. And I was like, dang. Because, you know, you got to understand, this is something I didn't put in the book. Ever since I could remember, this is what people used to tell me. You know your daddy come home. You know your daddy come home. Your daddy come home. You know your daddy come home. So I always thought he was coming home, like before it was time for him to come home, because I didn't know how much time he got. I didn't find out how much time he got until 2 weeks before we graduated high school. And that was told to me by my stepdad, because he got mad. He was like, I'm tired of your dad lying to y'all, telling y'all he coming home. This is 2002. He was like, your dad not coming home until no earlier than 2012. And, man, I remember, man, that broke my heart, man. Like, I'm talking about, I cried. Out there at Kingsbridge, I weeped like a baby. Like, you know, back then, you know, it was the internet. You can type in stuff. We had to dial up. Yeah, I remember he went in the room and got on the internet, did the dial up, and he came out with the paper. He printed out the paper. And on the paper, it had actual projection date. And it was like 2012 that my dad supposed to come home. So I was like, oh my God, he been telling me he coming home. You know, because my dad believed in God and he would pray and things like that. I guess he thought that, you know, he would find some loophole and come home, but he never came home, man. He lost his appeals and all of that. But it was a good reason my dad didn't come home, because I found out a lot of my anger that I have is a generational thing, and it's a generational curse. My dad was angry, you know. My dad hurt people, and I wanted to be just like him. And, you know, my dad was a kingpin, and I'm not praising that. I'm just telling you what it is. You can Google his name. It'll come up. He dated an FBI agent and all that, but I don't want to get into that. But the thing is, he was a very angry man, and he did things, and I wanted to be just like him. And I remember my mom growing up, my mom used to always tell me, man, your daddy was broke. He was the dumbest drug dealer ever. But when I got to age, like, you know, where I can go places on my own and see people, it was like, man, your dad was a king, boy. Your dad was a godfather, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, oh, man, I really want to be like him now. What he used to wear? They used to tell me, oh, he used to wear this. Well, what kind of gun he had? Well, he had this gun. So I wanted those types of things, because, like I said, all I ever wanted was his praise.
What is it about? Because, and this is great, because, and I don't want to get super somber, but, like, I lost my father last September.
I'm sorry to hear that, man. Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. You know, we're getting through it. Every day is a challenge, but we're getting through it. But it's so weird, because I've been wrestling with this since since, well, I was wrestling with it before, but since he passed, I've really been wrestling with it, because what is it about the boy? And like, I've been in therapy, like, I'm beating my therapist up with this shit. Like, you gotta help me solve. And the thing is, therapy, it's gonna be your sweat, right? Whatever you get out of it is all because you did. And I'm trying to figure out, like, what is it with boys and their dads being their heroes? Like, I can't understand, like, what.
Yeah, why not the mom, right? Why not the mom being the hero? You know, why not the mom being, she the one that carry you, she the one that clothe you when the dad walk away? And I just believe that it's something in our DNA. So you got to understand, the dad produced the seed, the mom carry and nurture it. So I believe for a boy, you looking at a mirror of yourself, of your older self, like, this is who I'm going to be when I get older. Like, you looking up to him. Like, when you young, you looking up to him. Listen, I'm just keeping honest. He could be a piece of you know what to your mama. He could be a person that don't even take care of you. But it's like, when you see him, it's something in you that resonates with him.
He always gets the pass.
He always get a pass. You know what I'm saying? Like, you'll let your mama have it. You'll let your mom, man, and that's the one that took care of you. You'll fuss back with her, get upset, you'll tell her how you feel, but you won't do that with your dad. And I just think it's because I believe that, I'm gonna be honest with you, it has to be something spiritual, man. It has to be something spiritual. Because as you say, you are in counseling, you're in therapy now. You're not the only male that feel that way. I'm not the only male that feel that way. It's millions of men that give their dad passes and look at them as heroes. And their dad can be the worst person ever, but if he come around their son, he gonna break down crying, or he gonna break down and that hardness gonna go away. You know what I'm saying? The dad know what to say to get that hardness to go away. You know, I believe mothers are the best coaches, but I believe a dad is the most mental influence you can have in your life.
It sets the example, because if you're a boy, that's the example of how to be a man. And if you're a girl... If you were a girl, well, guess what? This is the example of the man that I want. Yep. Whether he embodies everything that your daughter wants in a man, or I strongly dislike my dad, so I want a man that's the exact opposite of my dad. You're still reinforcing or creating the mold of what your kids want to be. And like, moms is important. Like, I definitely don't want to diminish moms. Like, they're everything.
Super dope.
That dad shit for boys. This is what you want to be as a man. Or if you dislike your dad, you want to be the exact opposite. Women, this is your first understanding of love. Like, yo, this is what you want in a partner. Yeah, you gonna see it with your parents.
That's why I believe it's something spiritual, man. Like, I really do. Like, because how can a woman look at her dad and say, either that's the dad, that's the type of man I want like my dad, or I want a man that's not like my dad? But everybody set the bar concerning their dad. It's never the mom. It's never, ooh, I want to be a woman like my mom. Ooh, I want a wife like my mom. Because actually, just being truthful, most of the time, men go marry women that's the opposite of their mothers.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
Or sometimes they think they're getting the opposite.
And they
attracted to all the qualities that are very similar to their mother.
Yeah, and the moms are super dope. Yeah. I just believe it's something spiritual, man. And it has to be something spiritual, because it's hard to break. It's hard to break curses. It's hard to break generational curses that a man set before his son. The son will say, oh, man, I don't want to follow down that road. Or I ain't going to do that. And it'll follow right down that road. Mm-hmm. So it has to be something spiritual. It has to be, man.
I like that. And I feel like you're reading off my notes, because that's exactly where I wanted to go. You know, I read your book cover to cover, and it's funny because you're not preaching in this book, so I don't want to paint it like you're preaching or you T.D. Jakes in this book or Billy Graham from the 700 Club, but there's definitely a spiritual influence in this book. Now, your spiritual journey, because you talked about your two active father figures. I don't want to say your father wasn't active, but your two like day-to-day role models. And I said earlier, like, I can tell you was raised by older men. So you had two grandfathers that were day to day with you. They was in the trenches with you. And one of them was really spiritual. So talk about that journey and how that influenced you, because I think it rings true in your book, and I think you carry it with you every day. So talk to us about that journey.
Yeah, I had both my granddads in my life. I had my father's dad in my life all the way up to the age 10 until he died. But he said something profound to me a week before he died. You know, that was the house that I used to go over. The guns would be there. The money would be there. You know, my granddad was very wealthy. He was known. He was a wealthy man. He had residential property in Portsmouth. He also had commercial, you know, stores and things like that, a pool hall in Portsmouth. So he was wealthy. But a week before he died, he told me I didn't need a gun and I needed to go to school. And if I prayed, my sickle cell would go away. And I'm looking at this man like, what? I ain't come around here to hear that from you. I'm already hearing that from my other granddad. I came around here to hear this gangster stuff. You know what I'm saying? I'm just being honest. I wanted to hear the gangster stuff. But that still stands with me to this day. And my mother, father, my granddad Melvin, he died in 2017. He passed 2017. And man, it's hard. It's hard even about to talk about him, because he was a great influence. Like, I never seen him argue with my grandma. I never seen him hurt nobody with his mouth or with his hands. He always uplift people, you know. And I'm going to share a story with you. Back in 2015, I believe, I was wanted. I was wanted for a failure to appear, you know. But I was like, I didn't want to turn myself in because I knew the jail wasn't going to treat me right with my condition. Mm-hmm. So I went to my granddad, a minister. I say, granddad, let me ask you a question. I say, listen, I'm wanted. I say, should I turn myself in and risk dying in there because they might not treat me proper with my illness? This is exactly what he said. He said, son, Papa, I love you. And I'm going to be very honest with you. I can't answer that question. That's a very hard question. Now, right then and there, I knew my granddad was the real deal, because I always knew he was spiritual, but he wasn't just spiritual. He was also everyday human being too. So he was realistic. You get what I'm saying? So that's the man that every time I had a problem in life, he always told me, how to meet that problem with prayer and believing in God. And he used to always tell me, get rid of that anger, son. Get rid of that anger. He used to always tell me, humble yourself. Humble yourself, son. Humble yourself. Like, I keep hearing that now when I get upset. I can just hear my granddad voice. Humble yourself, son. Humble yourself. You know what I'm saying? You can't go before God. That's one of his sayings. Mm-hmm. You can't go before God. Every time you go before God, you're going to make a fool of yourself. That's what he used to always say. And I remember a couple months before he died. He died in May 2017. Thanksgiving 2016. Man, I'm talking about family came from everywhere. Everywhere. And he put all of us in a circle. And I said, man, I remember saying this. I remember grabbing my cousin's hand. I said, this it, y'all. This the last one. I knew it. I felt it. I felt it in my spirit, yo. Like, nobody can't tell me. Like, I don't care what nobody say. I felt. I said, this the last one. This the last gathering we're going to have with our granddad. And he wasn't even sick at that time. He wasn't even sick at that time. You know, I just remember he put us in. He got in the middle of the circle and he started praying. He said, I can't recall everything he said, but he said, I'm not going to always be with y'all. But when I'm gone, promise me that y'all going to try hard to go where I'm going. And I'm going to heaven. That's what he said. That's what he said. And a week before he died, I found out this, like last year, or like sometime beginning of this year, he went blind. I didn't even know he was blind. So I remember my mom was already in the room, and I walked in the room, and she was like, Daddy. You know, she was a daddy's girl. She was like, Daddy, bruh here. And this is what he said, Dad, and I never forget it, man. He said, I always told you that boy had a good spirit upon him. He always got a good spirit upon him. And it made me cry. It made me cry, and I ran out the room. Because now that I look back, I was a misunderstood kid, man. I was just trying to be something that I want. I'm really a lover, man. I'm really a teddy bear. I'm really a genuine guy. I'm really a good friend. All of that, man. I just was trying to be something that I want. I was trying to be a gangster. I thought I really was living out the movie Godfather, you know, where my dad got my name from. My dad really named me after a mobster, after Sonny Corleone. His real name was Santino. That's where my dad named me from. So I really thought I was him. And as you see in that movie, that man got killed behind his sister. Running to the alien sister. And that's something that I used to do. And I had an uncle tell me, my dad brother tell me. And to this day, my dad mad at his brother behind what my uncle said to me. My uncle, he said, babe, he did prison time too, 15 years. He said, babe boy, he said, your daddy named you after a stupid man that got killed behind his sister. This was that what he said. He said, So I hear you around here trying to stop your sisters from being with men and all of that. So let me ask you something. I was like, what? He was like, so when a man getting ready to go have sex with your sister, you going to give her your hoe? I was like, huh? I was like, man, you tripping. You just came from prison. You tripping. He said, no, I'm trying to ask you something. He said, are you going to go that far that you going to lay on your sister and let a man I said, with you? I said, no, I ain't finna do that. He said, then stop doing the stupid stuff that you're doing. And man, from that day forth, that was like, my uncle came on 2005. That was like 2007. Man, I stopped. Like, my sister could call me and say, dude, beat her up. I'd be like, man, well, let me talk to him or something. and get his side and be like, oh, all right, man. Hey, look, y'all just chill out. But other like before that, I was on suicide mission. Man, I'm coming to kill you. I'm going to kill that nigga. And the whole time, crash my out. Sister be around there and be wrong.
Crash out, boys. And see, yeah, I was I wrote this note down. I wrote this note down, and you smoking this shit, boy. I'm going to tell you what. I wrote this note down. I said, early in life, it seemed like money and guns enticed you. Was that a natural child curiosity, or is it more deep-seated? And I referenced that because your grandfather told you to put the gun down and to seek spirituality. I don't want to say religion because I don't think think religion turns people off, but I think when you can individualize it and go into spirituality, I might not believe in the Catholicism, I might not believe in Christianity, but I do know that there is a higher power. I indeed all praise to the Most High.
Yes indeed. So man, like growing up, I seen SWAT kicking the door, the feds kicking the door, looking for my stepdad. He also went to federal prison, the one that my mom is married to now. Not trying to, everybody know me, know who I'm connected to. So he went to federal prison, but I seen the feds kicking the door, looking for him. I just seen a lot of gangsterism, not knowing that it was all a facade, because everybody that went to prison, this is exactly what they told me. My daddy, my uncle, my stepdaddy, them like the top three guys. You can Google my stepdad. I mean, you can Google my dad and my uncle. You can Google them. Like, they supposed to have made $20 million in 6 years. But I'm not trying to glorify that. But what I'm saying is, man, to this day, they'll tell you, boy, man, that was the stupidest thing I ever did in my life. Boy, if I could change it all over again, I would have snitched. That's what my daddy said. He said he would have snitched just to come home to be with his kids. He said because everybody he went to prison for told on him.
Yeah,
he did the most time. So everybody, putting on this facade and glorify, I was glorified gangsterism, Like I said, man, in my book, I talk about pieces of that. But I talk about, I wanted a gun when I got, a little bigger or whatever, because I was always small and I had an illness. And I seen my mama get beat on so much. So I was like, the first thing, well, I need me a gun, because I ain't going to never let no Negro hit my mama again or my sister. Or do something to me. So that's the reason I play gangster. But at the end of the day, man, I cry in a heartbeat, man. I cry, I pray for you. You know what I'm saying? I'll fight if I got to, but I ain't doing that no more for real, That's just how I was when I was younger. Like, boy, I had a battery in my back. I looked it up to my cousins, my granddad, my uncles, They in the streets. They about 8 years, 9 years older than me. They in the streets getting money. It's the era of, being fly, flamboyant. Then I got a cousin, a famous cousin, that shouted out my book, even on her platform, Nicole Ray. That was Missy Elliott, first artist that she signed from Portsmouth, Virginia. That's my first cousin. My mama and her mama's sisters. Actually, her mama is the one that helped me get my book published. My aunt, Deborah Murphy. That's Nicole Ray mom. That's my aunt. So, I always been around the fast life, the moving parts of the street life, meeting famous people at a young age, coming back out to Kingsbridge with the Techno Marine watch. Like, look what I got, Like, I'm fly with the DuPont jacket. My mom really messed me up, man. She messed me up. I love my mama to this day. I never disrespect her. I never let nobody else disrespect her. But yeah, I did. I have disrespected my mama growing up. I think you was outside that day. My mama chased me around the car. Yeah. Trying to put me in the car.
I was
trying to get me to go to a boys' home. You remember she chased me around the car, trying to get me to a boys' home.
Hey, your mama was sick of your shit. I ain't gonna hold you. Your mama was sick of your shit.
Yeah, she was sick of me, man.
Not only you got this ego and you got this battery in your back, and you,
yeah.
I can't even say you was angry. You were ornery. Like, you just carried it, like, all the time. But then, you gonna be unpleasant? Like, nah, homeboy, you not finna be all of these things. We finna put, and you not cooperating. But see what I see you talking about, and earlier you said when you talked about breaking generational curses, it's kind of like the slave mentality. And I don't mean like, you know, you go work for somebody for free and you just take it, but
no, I know
like,
exactly what you're talking about.
The curse of slavery.
Yeah, like
we beat our kids.
Yeah,
we beat our grandparents beat our parents.
Yeah,
our great great grands, like they handed down ass whoopings generationally because massa beat them.
Yeah, hey, so you know something? Hey, man, you just opened my brain up.
Beat somebody.
Hey, yo, you just opened my brain up. Cause listen, one of my friends and I today was talking about the baby boomers. They are so stubborn. They don't want to learn anything else but what they see on TV, whereas our generation between the ages 35 to 49, we are the greatest influence in the whole world. This age group, 35 to 49, we influence the music, fashion, everything, even religion, even spirituality. It's what our age group say. And the baby boomers, they messed up because they still have the slave mentality because, mm-hmm. yes, our parents beat us. But just being honest, we didn't beat our kids for real, for real.
No.
We was like, you know what? Better. We're going to talk to them. we not going to beat them because we thought that was so harsh. Or you'll go to jail for it. You understand what I'm saying?
An ass whooping never fixed nothing in my home. Like, an ass whooping, like when I was a kid, my mama whooped my ass and I just got better at being
doing
bad.
It's listen, you said it perfectly. A butt whipping never did nothing but make you be more sneaky at what you was doing so you won't get caught. That's it. Or made you more angrier. And just be honest, my mama got to the point where she didn't beat me anymore because she didn't want me to go in a crisis. So I used that. I knew, oh, I ain't gonna get no beating anyway. But I won't get in beatings, but I was coming home to trash bags full of my clothes saying, you can't stay here no more. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, you know, even it's been times as my adult, like, you know, like trying, my mom was a good mom, man. She a good mom. Like, I can remember living with her at like age 20 and still being disrespectful. And she said, hey, I love you, but you can't stay here tonight. To the point that she dropped me off at the hospital and said, hey, tell them you need a bed. Like, it had got down to, it got down to the point that, man, for real, I started losing everything behind my mouth. Behind my anger is secondary. You know what I'm saying? Anger is secondary. It's my wife tell me that all the time. Anger is secondary. What is the reason that you are angry? And I was angry because sickle cell was hurting me and the fact that my dad wasn't around. And you got to also understand, I was the only person in my family on both sides with this illness. Mm-hmm. I ain't had nobody to talk to. So, you know, they looked at me like, oh, he just a junkie. He just want to get high. Not knowing that when I go to the hospital, I'm in the hospital, I'm fighting for my life. Like I just put on my social media page the other day, back in 2013, I ended up going in the hospital thinking it's routine and ended up on life support.
You know, it was the lack of relatability. One, it's the missing presence of your father. then it's the lack of relatability with your issue. Because when you're going through this, it's no internet. You know, it's no, I mean, we didn't even have dial up when you was going through this for a good portion of it. And then once we did, I think the people that was closest to you had been seeing it front row seat. So they probably didn't bother to go do any research. But
exactly,
you felt alone.
Yeah, I did.
You had a support system. You had a great support system. I think you probably benefited from your support system because, like you said, your mouth, your anger, that battery in your back,
pushed them away.
That changes the course of history for you in your life. If you don't have this support system in place, yeah, you've gotten some shit, right? Because you can't save somebody from themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right. Like, you're right.
As hard as you can try, you can't save somebody from themselves. But man, I think the shit that you got into was, and I don't want to downplay what you went through because I read the book and it was excellent read. I don't want to downplay what you went through, but I think what you went through was less than what it could have been had you not had that system.
Yeah. Hey, listen, my mom tell me that all the time. My wife, like my pastor, my spiritual parents, they told me, my grandfather before he died, a lot of people have told me that a lot of things that I went through, I bought on myself. Things that I went through that I never was designed to go through, but I put myself in those situations. Just like the night that I'm talking about in the book that I got into trouble.
Oh, I was yelling at you. I was yelling at you reading this book, bro.
I'm high off medication. I'm in the house. My mom, my grandparents up there. You know, I don't know what made me want to do that. I don't know, man. And then when I got out there, I thought I really was living out a scene of a movie, man. And every time I went ahead and did things that I knew I wasn't supposed to do or opened my mouth when I knew I wasn't supposed to, I got in trouble. I got in trouble, man. Every time
I put the book down after I finished that chapter because I was, you know how black people get in the movie theater when they be hollering at the screen.
Like,
that
don't
was
do it.
Me. That was me reading the book. Like, why would you do that?
Like, why would I go out there and sit on this man's trunk?
Why is you instigating? And then I said, you know what? He gonna learn. And two pages later, I'm like, oh. He wasn't supposed to learn like that. That wasn't what I meant. I just thought he was going to get ass with me. Like, this wasn't the lesson.
No. I learned, man. I'm just now getting back my rights, man, to vote and all of that, man. I was a convicted felon. Man, listen. I was a convicted felon from the age 19 to basically 39. You know what I'm saying? I'm just now getting my rights back. So
that's great. We need more of that. We need more of that because you can go and you can talk to the young boys. Like, so this is a big question for you that I have. You know, knowing what you've been through, I'm confident that not only are you interweaving some of your spiritual journey. You know, this is therapy. This book, you writing this book was therapy for you. But what are you doing to give back to the young black men that may be in your position today that also feel alone, that carry that chip on their shoulder? What are you doing for them?
Well, you know what? That's a great question, honestly. And I don't have it copywritten yet. But I'm thinking about Fade Away. It's a program, and it actually stands for Fathers and Dads Everywhere, Always with a Youth. And what it's going to be is like a program, like a buddy system, like a mentor, you know, follow a kid that may get in trouble, that's on probation. And what we do, we help him with his homework, or we help him find a job. We just be there. We listen, you know, give him other outlets, take them fishing, let them know that it's other things than just the inner city and getting in trouble. You know, I really want to do that, and I'm really about to kick that off, really put that in fruition this year. And also I have the book, you know, and I want to get to a point where I could take some of the proceeds of the money from the book and put into Fade Away and get guys like even yourself. I know, you know, when you have the time, you wouldn't mind mentoring them or showing them how to start a podcast, showing them how to DJ, how to get into music. You know, that's the type of stuff I want to do, man.
Yeah, life skills. I'm down for it. Sign me up.
Let's do it, man.
It's super important. To me, like, you know, my dad said to me one time when I was just a young buck, he said, be a fountain, not a drain.
Be a fountain, not a drain. That's what your dad said to you. Wow.
I said, what the hell that's supposed to mean, man? He said, no matter what happens, give more than what you take.
Give more than what you take. I'm gonna have to recite that a lot. Give more than what you take. And so much, man, when you have anger issues like I dealt with, you're just a taker. Mm-hmm. Because the anger overtake you. It's so many times, like I tell people, anger just don't come by itself. It brings it two friends with them. You'll be like, what's his two friends? Rage and violence. That's what anger brings with it, rage and violence. If you keep having anger to the point that you can't control, it's going to bring those two friends, rage and violence.
That's good. Rage and violence. So when it comes down to your anger management, you've put in work to be in a better place. A little bit of it was spirituality. But you did the heavy lifting too, right? You talk to the lady, you do this, you get balanced, you have your counsel. You even got your wife telling you.
Yeah,
and that's like the best thing ever, right? When you got that at home support system,
yeah,
that somebody,
man,
that can tell you, like, you know, you shouldn't have did that.
Yeah, she really do it, you know. And it's so crazy, man, about my wife, you know. Her sister has three kids with my first cousin. So we grew up around each other, but we didn't like each other. So I've been knowing her since I was 8 years old. We did not like each other. You know, I used to see her and say, yeah, she thinks she all that, man. You know, because she used to walk with her head in the air. I said, yeah, I'm going to get her. She don't even know. I got, what? I'm going to blow. I'm going to get her. She don't even know. I'm going to get her. You know, she told her sister, she found out I had sickle cell. She was like, what is that? I'm going to catch that. Not knowing, you know, because people don't know. So yeah, that's another reason I wrote the book, to get the sickle cell awareness out. You know, she thought that I had yellow eyes, that if I touch her eyes, it get yellow. You know, it's just craziness, man, you know. Like, listen, man, I go to the hospital, right? I cannot stand when I come across nurses. They be like, how long have you had it? You born with it.
Not a nurse ask you that question.
Yeah, man,
that's
more
wild
than one. But in nursing school, guess what? They only talk about sickle cell for one day. That's Exactly. That's why we got to get this awareness out. And guess what? Right now, they got a cure for sickle cell. But guess how much it costs? $5 million.
Oh.
And they don't want a down payment or nothing. They want the whole $5 million.
Is it proven or is it just in the testing phase?
It done cured 29 out of 30 people.
Oh, no. That's they about it.
Exactly.
But
two white ladies.
$5 million?
Listen, the drug it's 2.9 million or it's one that's 3.1. And also the hospital stay is another 2 million. Ooh. So all of that together, you're looking at, okay, 2.9 plus 2 million, that's 4.9. You might as well say 5 million. Or 3.1 million plus 2 million, that's 5.1. So $5 million, man. What average black or brown person just has $5 million?
Mm-hmm. Just laying around.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like they want black and brown people to really get in trouble, man. Because think about it. You telling me it's a cure out here, it's $5 million, and I know it's multiple banks? That just give me an idea. Like, I want out of this pain. So do the masses want us to rob? What? Come on, man. Like, pharmaceutical, man. Like, they're not our friends. They're not our friends, man. Like, you know, but like I said, you know, I'm spiritual. That's in the Bible, too, though. Pharmacare is in the Bible. Say in the last days, people going to be on drugs and be using drugs. You know what I'm saying? And charging amounts of money to use drugs. And as you see right now, we have a real bad fentanyl epidemic, man, going on.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's the... First, it was the opioid crisis. That was the early 2000s into the teens. I mean, it's still going today, but I think when the Sackler family, when they got in their trouble for what they did with the pill, with the box, with, you know, they had the guy from the FDA quit his job with the FDA, and then they gave him a job with them, and he had the inside scoop. Hey, but if you want to get your joint past the FDA, here how you write it. Well, how you know? Because I worked with them for 30 years.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's crazy because it's like it's never a pandemic or epidemic until it happened to other races. Mm-hmm. And you know the race I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? The only epidemic that happened to us is killing that they talk about. But it's other people out here suffering in the black and brown communities. You know, and you think about this. Sickle cell is genetic. Black people and brown people are populating every corner of this earth. Within the next 5 to 10 years, if you do not put the awareness out about sickle cell, do you know how many kids are going to be born with it?
They just changed Roe v. Wade last year, year before.
Exactly.
They're about to start telling y'all young ladies that you can't take birth control. Then they're going to tell y'all that y'all can't go and, you know, you can't have an abortion. So, yeah, all of this. And they need to have better precursors to basically let you know that this is, you know, hey, this is something that's going to happen. But also, us black and brown people, we have to be responsible and
stick together, man.
And we got to talk about our medical history. This is one thing that I learned when my father passed. I spent all this time chasing down the army so I could get his medical records. And my brother was just like, well, what the hell you want with that for? And I'm like, well, you got kids.
Yeah,
you have kids, and when you go to the doctor's office, they always asking you, "Hey, what about your maternal grandparents?
Yeah,
what did they have? What about your paternal grandparents? Like they all in your family business." And it would be great if your kids could go in that room and say, "Like, yeah, my great grandfather, my grandfather had this. My dad got this." My uncle had a stroke at 35. Like I need my whole support system. I need them to all be aware of their medical history. And I talk about it all the time. Like, and nothing more than my father passing made me realize like death is a business. It was like that was like, oh my God, that was a big process. And it was every time I turned around, it was you need $36 for this piece of paper. And you might want to get 5 copies of this piece of paper because people don't want a copy. They want the original, and they're not giving it back. And then I realized that death isn't just a business. Health is the biggest business because...
Yes, it is. Because life is life. And you know, one thing for certain, when you're born, you gon' die. That's one thing for certain. Unless Elon Musk or one of them got a button or a pill that make you live forever, but that ain't going no, man.
They're gonna charge more for that pill than they do the damn sickle cell pill. I'll tell you that much right now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
So I got a question, and then I'm gonna get into some regular, not book related stuff. So you talked about your parenting style, and you talked about being physically present with your children, but not but being emotionally distant. Yeah. So how did you break that curse?
I was in my oldest son life from the beginning all the way up to now. My second son is with my wife now. I knew he was always my son, you know, and I was there a little bit in the beginning, but me being immature and just being a little punk, I'm going to just be honest, things ain't go my way and like that, I wasn't in his life. I would see him throughout periods of time, and my mom and my sister would get him like certain times, all the way up until he was 9. Then I got in his life, and I've been in his life ever since. So the past 9 years, I've been in his life. So I remember when he was 15, me and my current wife now, she was my girlfriend then, we got in a little argument and I left the house. I stayed at my dad's house for a night or two, and then I went back. And when I went back, it was a hole in my chair, like my gaming chair. And I was like, who put this in there? And you know, they was like, you know, my wife has 2 other kids, you know, they're not biological minds, but they're mine. They're my kids too. So I was asking, I was like, who put this hole in the chair? And it was like, Darion. So I went and asked him. He was like, yeah, I did it. And you know, it just, the dialogue was back and forth. And he basically said, listen, you weren't there for me the first 9 years of my life. I don't need you now. And when he said that, it made me cry. I cried. You know, I really cried. I wept. Honestly, I wept to my then girlfriend, which is my current wife, and I wept in my car. I remember I left and went out in the car first and drove around and I cried. And I said, he'll never, ever be able to say I wasn't there for him ever again in life because I'm going to be there. And that's what I started doing. Now, before me and my wife got married and started a relationship, because we always dealt with each other on and off since 2002, the end of 2002, we dealt with each other on and off. And then there was a period that we stopped dealing with each other and I got into a relationship, da da da. I really don't want to go into it, but I ended up having a daughter, and my daughter got sickle cell. And right now, to this day, she's being used as a pawn. So I was in her life, and then it was like, no, you can't be in her life. So I have to go take legal action behind that to be in her life. So what am I doing different? I do things like this. I started before the pandemic in 2020. I started having Bible study with my mother, my sister, my nephews, my son, both my sons and my stepkids and my wife. We all started having Bible study. And what we would do, we would change. Every day, it would be someone else's turn to read something in the Bible, whatever they wanted to read. And what we would all do at the end, we'd talk about it. Like, everybody would give their point of view. So, that's one thing I did. Another thing I did was game night. We played Monopoly every weekend. 4-5 games, back to back. All the way up to about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. We play Monopoly. So, I showed my kids togetherness. And I told my sons, I said, y'all do not have the same mother. But let me tell y'all something. Y'all are more brothers than anything because y'all came from the same seed maker, and that's me. So y'all gonna be brothers, period. You know, and I encourage that, you know, and I just let my kids, I still play the game with them, the Xbox. Like, my oldest son was just around here yesterday. I cooked Sunday dinner. He was around here. We played 2K. I beat him in 2K. And then we put the mat in, and then I beat him in that. And I told him, I said, yeah, I'm still the sports king. He was like, nah, I let you win. But that's what I do different. I just be there, man. I be there and I listen. You know, I try to navigate. Even though they go through things that I don't like, I listen. And I'm just so thankful to God that both of my sons listen to me. And they credit good, and they're outstanding men. That's like, at that age, I was already a convicted felon at their age. I was a convicted felon with a kid, straight out of high school. So, if you ask me, they already beat the generational curse, and they don't have sickle cell. But they have to be careful about who they're going to marry, because they both have the trait. So they don't want to marry someone that got the trait. So that's something that they be asking their little girlfriends and stuff now. Like, my oldest son, you know, he's been with his girlfriend for about 4 years now. She just entered her last year into college to be an orthodontist and an oral surgeon, you know. So she don't have the trait. And then my youngest son, he got a little girlfriend. He gone crazy over. He been talking to her now for about 2-3 years. She don't have the trait. So I let them know, man, because they have seen me get angry and lose my cool. They have seen me go to jail, be in jail. So they have seen everything, and I have never shielded them from seeing those experiences. I ain't never say, well, it's not like what you think. I let them know it is what you think. I did da-da-da-da-da. That's why I got to go to jail. Or, no, you know, sugarcoating. I ain't sugarcoating nothing. I let them know, you know, especially my son that's been a Marine, he deal with anger too, just like me. And I let him know, hey, man, you see where this anger can land you at. Don't go down this road.
And it's going to help you.
Yeah. Don't.
This is good. So, and I think, and this is going to be a good question for you. So my dad didn't believe in, like, age-appropriate conversations. So, like, he'd be telling me stuff, like, and it would be, like, the deepest stuff you ever heard in your life. Like, he would break it down for me. And he, you know, one day I came in the crib and he called me Frank, and I had some friends with me from school. He called me Frank, and I was just like, yo, you know, I'm coming in here with people from school. Like, that's a house name, bro. Like, don't call me that. And he said, he looked me dead in my face and he said, hey, man, my father gave me this name. And I worked my whole life to keep dirt off this name because I knew I was going to give it to you one day.
Wow.
So don't disrespect what I gave to you at any turn in your life. And I'm 7, so that doesn't really, it don't hit me, you know, like I'm assuming he thought it would. But
like if you're 20.
Yeah, but it stuck with me my whole life. So mission accomplished, right?
Yeah.
And like he talked to me like that my whole life. Like I was a youngin, he just hit me with gems and they just wasn't age appropriate. So I say, like, as a parent, it's our turn to give our kids the same thing. Like, yeah, you know, 4 or 5, cool. You know, baby talk to kids, talk to them at their level, but get to that point where you're giving your kids the real, because that's my favorite part about being an adult today. Like, I call my mom and I kick it with her and I'd be like, yo, what was high school like for you? Like, I want to know my parents before they were parents, because that's all you get, right? Like, you got your mom and you got your mom when she was a parent, but like, what was high school like for you?
Yeah, like, who really are you?
What was you good in school? Yeah, like, before you was my mom, like, what's up with you, bro? I want to get to know you. And that's, like, my favorite thing now. Just talking to my parents and, like, getting in their business. Like, yo, so, like, my stepdad grew up in Queens. I'd be like, yo, so, like, you ran the block? Like, what was you doing in Queens? You go to the next game? He was just like, man, I skipped school so much. I don't know how I graduated, man. My sister helped me graduate. She let me carry off the test. So it's just real cool seeing that side of your parents and making sure that you give the same thing back to your kids, because they might not be curious enough to ask about it now. Because think about you when you was their age. You thought you knew your parents.
Yeah.
You really thought you knew your parents because you had a front row seat for 18, 19, 20 years.
And don't know them at all.
You ain't know what motivated them. You know, my mom came from a small town of Pennsylvania. My dad came from a small town of Louisiana. They just wanted to get out. Like, my mom could have went to college for free. She tried to get into USC, and she got in on a scholarship, half scholarship, and her peoples couldn't pay the rest of the bread. So she joined the military. It's like, yo, bro, why you ain't just go to the college right up the road for free? Grandma worked there. All our peoples worked there. She was like, yo, I wanted to get out of this town.
I feel on that. I understand it. My mom said she was going to join the Air Force one day, and my dad came in there and ripped up her paperwork. I was like, nope. And I'm glad he did, because if she was in the Air Force, I wouldn't be sitting here talking today. So, that's a fact, you know. So
tell me the best parent advice that you ever got, and who gave it to you?
The best parent advice I ever got was, I don't know, man, because like you saying, you know, your dad talked to you, and, you know, but it was age, not age-appropriate questions and things that he said. So I'm going to say this. My mom gave me excellent advice on, you know, my dad did too. But they could only give me advice from their point of view. Mm-hmm. And I talk about it in my book. I mentioned two people. I say that really were my influences. And that was Joe and Lola Mills, my spiritual parents. I listened to them a lot. Like, from the ages 18 to now, I listened to them a lot because they're older and they've been married over 60-something years. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That they are my oldest son great grandparents. So I listen to them a lot, man. You know, I done seen Mr. Joe, a man that wasn't, you know, very like into church at one point in time, even though his son is the pastor. Now he's been committed into church like over the past 10 years, heavy, you know what I'm saying? So not only he is a person that I learned from what he say do, but he's also practicing what he preach. And that's a lot that I learn from. That's the best way I learn, is by people that practice what they preach. Because I don't want nobody telling me this, that, and the third, and that they ain't never been through nothing. You get what I'm saying? How you gonna tell me how to navigate through life if you ain't never been through this, that, or the third? Like, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe it.
You are on armchair quarterback. That's what they call it, the Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I like that, armchair quarterback. You trying to tell me how to do something or live a life that you never lived. You know, I get it if you're telling me, you know, strive for this, or strive for that, or go after this, go after that. That's cool. But when you start giving advice and it's like from just your point of view, you're wrong for the most part. You're wrong, you know. So that's why in the book, in my book, I just was raw with everything. Like, look, I ain't trying to come off as no pastor. I ain't trying to come off as no gangster. I'm just me. I'm just telling you my experiences, what I was thinking or what I wasn't thinking. This is what I did. And this is how I got through this. And I'm still going through this, or I'm still going through that. It just was free flowing, man. You say you know about therapy, so you know how they tell you when you're sitting on that couch or laying on that couch, they telling you, you know, what are you going through? What's on your mind? You know what I'm saying? Like, like that stuff really ain't gonna help you, man. You know what I'm saying? You need some real. Somebody that's really been through it, man, for the most part.
It's a combination. Look, I tell everybody, because we was raised in this where we had a village.
When you was young
coming up and you was outside cussing, playing basketball, the neighbor will whoop your tail. And then when your mama get home, indeed. The neighbor tell your mama, hey, you know, I had to whoop his tail today because he was cussing. You might get three whoopings before you lay your head to bed that night, because we have community. Yes,
indeed. Yep. Today, we lack community. You can't even talk to somebody else's kid.
Yeah, today we lack community, but you have to build your own village. It's not just going to be, like, for me, it's not just therapy. I'll podcast 10 hours a week. Because that's my unlicensed therapy, right? Because I need a personal outlet. I walk around my house talking to myself as if I'm podcasting for hours a day. People be sick of me. and I get my feeling. I call people randomly and I just be holding court, holding conversations, but I also make sure I'm available for people when they need me. So I think it definitely takes a village. Well, I want everybody to find you, plug your social media platforms, tell us where we can find the book.
On my Facebook is Santino Blow. You can look me up there. You know, it'll have a picture of my book, Fearless Survivor, the cover on it. And I'm on Instagram as well as Santino Blow. That's basically what I have so far. The book is on Amazon right now and is out on Kindle. I'm trying to see how to go about getting it in certain hospitals, especially CHKD, the sickle cell program there. Where I was a kid, I went to that same program. I want to get my book in that program and at the centers and things of that nature. So I'm in the works of that. But yeah, you can find me on IG and Facebook, Santino Blow. And the book is on Amazon and Kindle, Fearless Survivor. And it's actually number 89 out of the top 100 on Amazon right now for survival. Books for Survival is number 89 out of 100. I think that's a good deal, being in the top 100 of anything, especially on Amazon, which is a global website, you know, global merchandise everywhere. Heck so,
yeah, y'all hear yep, that, listeners? I Santino said he's in the top 89. By the end of the month of August, I would like to see him in the top 50, listeners. Stay tuned.
Let's do it.
Next week, we're going to have some giveaways for the book for anybody who listens to the pod. I'm going to have a little raffle free to join. I just need you to like, comment, and subscribe. And I also need proof that you follow Santino on his platforms. The only thing that I ask when y'all purchase the book is to find me, tag me where you know where to find me, send me an email letting me know you got the book, and find Santino and tag him and let him know that you got the book too. Like, comment, subscribe. It's the content creators economic system. That's how we survive. That's how we show our engagement, and that's how we show our impact. So folks, please go to where you purchase your books. Amazon, the first book sales place ever. Before they started selling everything else back in the early 2000s, all they sold was books. That's crazy. Yep. But Fearless Survivor, and one last time, I want to thank you for having a good, great, excellent conversation with me, Santino. Father,
man, you know, appreciate author, it, man.
Fearless Survivor.
Man, thank you for having me, man. My childhood friend, man, I see you doing big things. I'm so thankful and grateful that you put me on your platform. I just remember us growing up playing the game. I never would have thought in a million years that you would be a successful man, you know, with a platform that I could even come on. A great dad, and now me being an author myself. So I just thank you for having me, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you for sharing your story. And we definitely going to have you come back. So keep the calendar open for us. I'm going to close it out. Something you mentioned in the book.
Nah, you never feel my pain, nigga. You can never feel my pain, nigga. Never feel my pain. 1974, motherfucker, I was born with pain. My moms and my pops pass it down to me. So don't talk to me about can I feel yours, cause I ain't feeling you at all. Your pain isn't pure. You crying cause you broke from the projects. That's not pain, that's emotions. You a bitch, I'm talking about permanent physical suffering. You know nothing about that. You just complain cause you stressed. Nigga, my pain's in the flesh. And through the years, that pain became my friend. Sedated with morphine as a little kid, I built a tolerance for drugs, addicted to the medicine. Now hospital emergency treat me like a fiend. I rabbit die sometime, I wish a nigga OD. Begging God for help, only to find that I'm all by my goddamn self. And you can never feel my pain, nigga. Nah, you can never feel my pain, nigga. Never feel my pain, nigga. Never feel the pain, nigga. You never feel the pain, nigga. Nah, never feel the pain, nigga. In a female's ass, P, why you always look mad? Don't mind me if I make him off like that, but she. A nigga depressed, I need smoke, I need me a drink, I'm trying to stop though. Experience life through the shoes of me. What you find is you can't do that, you ain't built for it. The impact I put on this earth, it's like nothing that you ever seen or heard. So look, listen, when I speak, sit up in your seat. Pay attention to the words, cause the story is deep. In and out of crisis, since before I can walk. It gave me strength though, nowadays I hardly talk. It made me cold-hearted, anti, I won't play sports. I rarely joke or play games, take it how you want. My handicap took its toll on my sanity. My mom got me after shrinking like 13. And doctors call the cops on me, cause I be throwing IV poles and they ignore me. I gotta try to calm down and breathe. I can only hold it but for so long, put me to sleep. Do I sound insane? If I do, then this here was written for you, cause you can never feel the pain, nigga. Nah, you can never feel my pain, nigga. You can never feel my pain, nigga. Never feel the pain, nigga. You never feel the pain.